And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the season series debut of Voices from the Grid. I'm Michael Lindenbaum, and underneath me is Sasha.
The one and only Sasha Kaplan.
And next to her is Brian.
Yosh. What's going on?
And right next to me is the undisputed champion of Awesomania, Mr. Ben Taylor.
That's right. It's me, Mr. Ben Taylor. Can we talk about how you say that people are under you? I thought this was a partnership, buddy.
I'm just going with based off of Zoom.
Sure, okay. You are. Sure. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Well, Captain Ego over here. What are you, Tommy Oliver?
There it is. And we haven't even started the show.
Boom!
Says the man who has himself
right in the first episode.
Says the man who has himself as Zordon in the command center.
Excuse me. As per A, I'm not Zordon in the command center because I'm not in the tube. I'm just in the command center. And we're talking about a Zoom background. And B, I do believe we had a conversation where I was going to be the one assigning Ranger roles. So I am Zordon. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Just keep that ego in check. It'll be fine.
No.
We could talk about egos another time.
Oh, we're going to talk all about egos.
Yeah. We have years and years.
So, but for this, this is Voices from the Grid. I and this is obviously our series premiere for season one of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Yep.
I think we should just nip this in the bud right now. There is going to be some awkwardness when you listen to later episodes because they were previously recorded before this episode was recorded. Because of how things were supposed to be beforehand, but then suddenly changed. I think that's the easiest way to put it.
Yep. I wonder why.
And we figured that we'd just do an episode to introduce. You won't usually have all four of us on an episode. Yeah. So we're just
that way, when you do, it is a treasure.
By treasure, you mean tragedy.
No, I'll stick with what I said. A spectacle.
Oh boy, let me put some quarters in the sheet and see what co-host I get this time. Oh, cool, it's a Ben.
What's this? It's Brian? Damn it.
I'll trade up for Sasha any day.
So we're going to start with Day of the Dumpster. And we're going to do what I hope will be everyone's favorite segment in my mind.
Wrong, 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 wrong. Wrong, 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 wrong. You're wrong.
I'm just going to keep shaking my head. Nobody can see it, but the point is there.
And that's the quick run through of Day of the Dumpster, which we begin our journey in space as two idiots, astronauts, open up a space dumpster because why not? We're in space. Let's just go out there. The first thing we're going to do is just open up this dumpster. Let's do that. And as a result, Rita Repulsa and her minions are released from captivity. But it's not a good start for Rita as she steps in a puddle right away. Poor Rita. However, she now makes it known that what her target is, and that will be Earth, unlike in the opening credits scene where she outwardly says it. Now at the youth center, we see Zach and Jason sparring with Trini doing some Muay Thai and Kim doing gymnastics. Billy arrives later and is ready for his first karate class. Thus, we then meet Bulk and Skull looking for their double date with Trini and Kim, which then begs the question, who are the bullies again? Back on the moon, Rita has really outdone herself at the palace, and it's time now for Putty Patrollers. But then back at the youth center, Billy is wearing a communicator, as is Jason. Those haven't been introduced yet. Billy has a mental, has the mental aspect down for karate, but not the physical yet. And then Bulk and Skull come in once again to be embarrassed by Jason and Billy and others. So which begs the question of who are the bullies again? Later, the others comfort Billy after the class, and then an earthquake hits. At the command center, we meet Zordon and Alpha. Time to get those teenagers, and they arrive and are confused. They are educated on Rita and Zordon and Alpha, some education on their powers and the Zords, They leave because they can't believe what's going on. Rita then sends the putties to attack the teenagers, and after taking a beating, they finally morph. Alpha and Zordon are happy, and the Rangers are sent to face Goldar. Rita makes Goldar grow, and it's sword time. And how did Jason know about the power sword when he was actually never told about that? Back at the command center, Zordon gives them three rules of being a Ranger, and they agree to do it and be Rita's everlasting headache. And that was Day in the Dumpster and a quick run through.
Yep.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I mean, the first thing we got to talk about is the theme tune, right?
Yes.
The theme song?
Yeah. My note is here, this theme slaps, or is it a banger? Isn't that what the kids say nowadays?
We here worship the great man that is Ron Wasserman. Because you kind of have to. He will, you know, like, looking back on other theme songs that he has written, whether for Power Rangers or not, his theme songs tend to stand out. I still have the X-Men ringtone as X-Men theme as my ringtone, because I grew up on 90s X-Men, so, like, that's... It packs a punch every time, whether it's the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers or it's a later one.
And both were on Fox Kids around the same time, so it's like he was getting... I hope he was getting, like, major royalties for that.
No.
Well, we'll have to read the book to find out the details of that. But I've said this before, and this is the first episode of the series, so I'll say it again. I actually watched the season first in Russian. So this was my first time actually watching the Day of the Dumpster from beginning to end in English. Which doesn't really matter much since I don't really remember the Russian, but there's one thing that, like, I'm still very confused about.
One thing.
Well, there's one very specific thing that I'm thinking of right now in this moment.
Please say it's the cockpit of the Megazord.
No, that's the least confusing thing. It's the overbearing and overly emotional.
Oh, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. I got tons of notes before that.
I'm glad I'm not the only one.
For example, and listeners, get used to this, because I'm going to say it on every single episode I'm on. That's not how science works. The very first thing we see is two dudes on the moon.
Casually strolling.
Running. Also, in later seasons of Power Rangers, there's an atmosphere on the moon. Why are they wearing protective gear? Or is it that the atmosphere on the moon is created by Rita's palace?
I think it's because of the palace.
Huh. Okay.
Technically, the planet that they're on is not the moon.
It is in Power Rangers.
It is in Power Rangers. I know where you're going, Brian,
it's
because
not
in the
Sentai, but in Power Rangers, it's the moon. It's stated several times.
I thought it was Planet Nemesis on Power Rangers 2.
No.
They specifically state it's the moon.
So even though, like, you still see it, because that
like
is
Mars. Because,
well, no. Well, here's the thing: that footage that you get, and you see it in the very next episode too, is straight up Sentai footage. So because in the Sentai it is like a different planet far away.
Yeah.
For the sake of Power Rangers, they made it the moon because they didn't want to confuse children.
They also had the whole thing in this episode where it goes, I destroy the nearest planet, and it's Earth is right there. It's definitely the moon.
Yeah.
I will say, yeah, no, I agree with Ben that also, like, they find this giant dumpster, right? That's the next thing. And they don't scan it. They don't, like, do anything to, like, maybe we shouldn't open this thing. Maybe
let's just open the thing.
Can we also point out?
It's basically, like, the first half of Aliens, or, like, the first Alien movie, but, like, in the first, like, minute, where they're just like, oh, that looks cool.
Also, can we point out, this thing is called Day of the Dumpster. The thing they open is an urn. little dumpster.
But for children, it's like a dumpster shape. So
no, it's not. Maybe trash can shape, but not a dumpster. Fine.
But Day of the Dumpster sounds a lot cooler than Day of the Trash Can.
or Day of the Urn.
I don't know. This episode should be in a trash can.
Day of the Dumpster Fire.
Yes. OSHA would crap. OSHA would be like, who's opening this? You're not going to like radio back to home base and be like, look, dude, we found a thing. Should we open the thing? No. Like, but we're going to open the thing.
There's like a giant rock. It's kind of like parts of it are sort of glowing. And like maybe the lure of the urn had like magic powers that made them open it. But there's never an explanation in canon to justify that.
Right.
Basically, they're lured over by Steven Universe's navel gem and are like, oh, let's open that up.
So I'm curious what happens to these two astronauts after, though. So, like, do they just go home like, Houston, we didn't find anything on the moon.
So well, we could dispel this now because it doesn't get answered at all.
At least in Power Rangers.
Yeah, in the Power Rangers, it doesn't get answered. In the Sentai, they're actually captured. And they're tortured. And as we'll find out in the next episode, the ship is actually used. And we'll talk more about that in the next episode. But in regards to Power Rangers, we don't know what happened to the space guys.
I've still got more to say about this first scene, by the way.
Of course you do.
First of all, Rita steps in a puddle. On the moon.
On the moon.
Yes. That's not how science works!
We already covered the fact that the moon works differently in Power Rangers. Or if we haven't covered it, then that should just be the point. Like, this is a universe where there's water on the moon, okay? Like, we're two steps away from a moon colony at this point.
We're also, as we've referenced, we're recording a couple of these out of order. So, you don't often get to see Rita from, like, the shoulders down.
Oh, that's true.
I'd completely forgotten about her egregious pointy cone bra in the Madonna style.
Yeah.
It was quite I was like,
it's what? The look. It is absolutely
a
look.
I absolutely forgot about that. Also,
it's the 90s, man. Don't question it.
Also, for the very first time I noticed this today when I was doing my rewatch of Day of the Dumpster, as Rita is stepping in the puddle, it is announced that one of the writers on season one of Power Rangers is called Tony Oliver.
Yes. He's also does voices for the show as well.
I think he was the voice of Saba, actually.
He was actually the voice of Saba.
Tommy Oliver. Tony Oliver.
So, okay, well, here's the thing. So even though we're jumping ahead and going to Tommy...
Tommy, who's that?
Tommy Oliver is, in fact, named after Tony Oliver, just like how Billy Cranston is named after Bryan Cranston.
Yeah, I had no idea about any of that. I just noticed it in the opening today.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that's where the that's where the Oliver name came from.
Then, one of the last things we see is Rita blowing up the quote-unquote dumpster. So how does Zed put her back in it in season two?
Maybe Zed had another one.
He had I mean, you know, maybe.
I mean, everyone's
he
got a
doubles.
Spare trash can, right?
I mean, let's be
what
honest.
Were you saying, Brian?
I was saying maybe he has doubles, you know, like he's a collector like that. You know, it's like one to display, one to, you know,
one to open,
the box.
One to play with.
Yeah.
And like,
you made me open the package. It was new in box. It was meant in box on eBay.
Let's be real, though. Like, from the perspective of Lord Zed, like, would you really want to keep these people around? I know I wouldn't if I was a supervillain.
God, I wouldn't keep Squat around to save my life. Ugh.
Squat and Babu would be the only two I'd want to keep around.
Oh, and Finster.
I'd keep Finster around.
Finster would be... I wouldn't be keeping Finster around. Finster would be keeping me around. Finster's the real genius here.
Yes.
Fair.
I mean, my queen.
All right, I'm done with that scene now.
Yay.
So, has Zordon, I guess Zordon's been in a tube for 10,000 years, and have he and Alpha, like, literally just been talking to each other with nothing else to do for 10,000 years?
Well, we know from the episode later in this season, or is it next season, where Kim goes back in time.
Right.
That, yeah.
Season. That's not this season.
Yeah, it's next season.
Yeah, but we know that they've been on Earth for
a while.
Yeah.
I will say aesthetically, it makes a little more sense in the 2017 movie that, like, they've been underground and kind of, you know, hidden away. But, like, here it's like, man, there's not even a speck of dust in this place. Like
the what?
Because, okay, so they've been on Earth for like 10,000 years.
Yeah.
And the whole thing is, like, that place is really clean and modern looking. Whereas right. in like the 2017 movie,
the what?
It makes a little. Okay. Don't start with me, Ben. Don't. No. Okay.
We'll get there eventually, but I'm terrified when we do.
Well, okay. Screw my point then.
No, I was just making fun of the fact of the. I was just making fun of the movie. You've got a point. It is very clean.
Yeah. Whereas, like I was saying, in that movie that apparently doesn't exist for Ben, it looks a little more like rustic and like, oh, this place has been around for eons. So.
Yeah, that's fair. That's the one credit I'll give that movie.
Bear in mind, at the end of season three, when time jumps back 10 years, the Power Rangers power center is out of power because Alpha unplugged the console to run a vacuum cleaner.
It's Power Rangers. There's just some things you really shouldn't question.
No, but the point is, he's got a vacuum cleaner, which means he's been cleaning.
And
so now we know why it's not a dusty command center.
But we know that 3 seasons later.
Right, but it's being discussed now.
We will leave it.
It's Chinatown.
Brian made a point on discussing it. Isn't that the point of us being here?
Yeah. Fair
enough. Or would you like us to all just be quiet so you can talk, Mike? Sasha viciously shaking her head.
I was like, don't give Mike the mic.
Don't Mike the mic.
He had a whole segment to himself, and now look at him. Big F. He's everyone's favorite episode. Where are we? I'm sorry.
Let's head to the juice bar.
Oh, cool. I'm famished.
Let's continue this. The juice bar is a pretty, like, from, like, an aesthetic, like, design perspective, it's a pretty cool place. Like, if I was a teenager in the 90s, that's where I want to hang out. There's karate lessons that are for free, presumably. We've never shown how much any of these lessons cost. So.
Money has no concept in the Power Rangers universe, except for when it nearly kills Ernie.
And so we see that, like, there's, like, a little gymnastic spot where Kimberly's doing her thing. We see Trudy, who's, I guess, doing, like, some kind of version of, like, maybe Tai Chi or something.
Looks like she's doing Tai Chi, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Mike called it Muay Thai in the intro.
Yeah, I said Muay Thai. I think I meant Tai Chi, but...
Because Muay Thai is kickboxing, so... Yeah.
That was, like, a slightly accelerated version of Tai Chi, I think. Because it was, like, a little bit faster than I think how Tai Chi is supposed to be, but, like... Yeah,
there's different versions of Tai Chi.
That's true. And then we have Jason and Zach, who are, like... I guess they were fighting or something, or, like, sparring.
They're sparring, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Zach's got some moves.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have just, like, Bulk and Skull's entire...
What's really interesting to note, though, is the first time we see the juice bar, we see Kim, Trini, Zach, and Jason.
Yep.
Don't see Billy.
Yep.
It's almost like, this is where these four are in their element. And then you'll see later on when we first go to the command center... Billy's then the one in his element, and it's a really nice counterpoint.
It was probably unintentional, but
it's absolutely unintentional.
There's not that much forethought in power in a lot of Power Rangers seasons. I like the fact that, like, One of the things that I found that was interesting was, like, you see all of them have some kind of fighting prowess, except Billy. And so, like, we know he...
Kim. Kim doesn't have a fighting prowess.
Yeah. He actually performs his throw on Skull. Right there and then.
Oh, yeah. So she can know something because she doesn't manage to flip him.
Yeah.
But also,
And that's one of my points here is it's like in Bulk and Skull's first appearance, right? Bulk and Skull show up and they just, being teenagers, they turn to Kim and Trini and like, how about a date? And they're like, no thanks. And Bulk and Skull say, are we not good enough for you? At which point Zach comes over to try and be like, you heard the ladies, leave him alone. And they're like, no, we can take care of Bulk and Skull. And then do.
It seems like an excessive reaction.
But then we're supposed to believe that Bulk and Skull are bullies, even though in their very first appearance, they get handled like that. I'm like, that's not a bully. That's just teenage posturing. Right? That's just two boys.
And, you know, to be honestly, I can totally understand the posturing when you factor in what we find out over the course of the season about our characters. Billy's a genius. Yeah. You know, they all do all of these, like, charity events, and they have...
Kim's a prodigy in martial arts. Jason's this undefeated karate master. Trini can do anything she turns her hands to. Zach is a really good dancer.
Yeah. So, like, by comparison, Bulk and Skull are, you know, average.
They're trying to measure up.
Yeah.
And they're trying to make themselves feel because... Like, the very first thing is they're asking Trini and Kim out on dates. It's the ultimate teenage thing, right? And it's just like, well, we've got to make ourselves look good because we're trying to take these two out on a date, right? Like, I don't know. We will talk about this a lot over the course of the season, but we're all in agreement that Bulk and Skull are the real characters in the show, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
But that's what I'm saying, is all through the show, they're referred to as the bullies. But we never see them actually bully anyone.
We see them...
We see them try.
Like, yeah. Yes,
but then they should be referred to as bad bullies, not actual bullies.
I think there's an episode like later on where, like, I think it was what, like, the evil rangers or whatever that show up and, like... They scare off Bulk and Skull, like, by being just, you know, absolute, you know, a-holes. And I'm like, okay, yeah, they're not bullies. They're literally being bullied here.
Yeah.
Bulk and Skull are, they're like wannabe punks. Like, they want to be the cool, sly, you know, like, not bullies, but like the punks that reject authority and all that jazz.
They're teenagers.
They're just kind of teenage goofballs that, like, need a friend.
And one of the interesting things is that in some of these early episodes, Bulk and Skull were actually supposed to have a group of friends that were supposed to help them bully others. Mm-hmm. That ended up, like, you see those friends for, like, 2-3 episodes, and then they just get dropped.
Budget cuts!
Yeah, so, actually, it wasn't a matter of budget cuts, it was a matter of making the story work, and they couldn't make the story work.
So
they were apparently supposed to be the actual real bullies, and then with a group of friends to kind of counteract against the five rangers, and it just kind of went to the wayside. Because honestly, you could also see it, like, early on, Bulk and Skull, you know, were the characters. They didn't need three supporting friends to go up with the rangers.
Well, I think it was when they decided to take them from being bullies to being
the
comedy slapstick.
Yep.
I don't know.
So, can we mention Alpha's teddy bear?
We'll get to that.
I really like Alpha's teddy bear.
I feel bad because Brian's not said a whole lot. Have you got stuff to add to the melee over here?
You know, do I have anything necessarily prepared? No.
Don't prepare, just talk.
I did watched the episode beforehand, and I mean, I don't really comment on Bulk and Skull, because even though I will admit that like they are the heart and soul of Power Rangers for this couple seasons, initially growing up, I was not a big fan of them. I yeah. felt like they, like as a kid, I felt like they were dragging the show down, because I was like, I want to see people in spandex hitting other people in spandex or rubber suits. And I always thought that like Bulk and Skull were kind of dragging the show down. As I got older, I realized that's not the case, but like there's always a little part of me going like, I don't know about that. So,
I think the comedic elements that you bring up, that's a good point, Brian. I've noticed it a lot in like rewatching like current Power Ranger seasons.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it a lot.
God,
with,
don't
like,
get me started on Ninja Steel.
Actually, I was just going to bring that up, but like Ninja Steel and even in Beast Morphers, the comedic, like the slapstick actually really drags the show away from the more interesting stuff.
I think
more so in Beast Morphers, where like that kind of slapstick is unnecessary because of like the seriousness of like the whole command structure and everything.
I really enjoyed Beast Morphers, but Ben and Betty nearly made me turn that show off.
I can imagine. And I can't remember what the names are of the guys in Ninja Steel, but oh
Monty
my god,
and,
I want to just like,
Monty and something.
Yeah.
If they were just, I don't know, that's a separate conversation that we will get to.
We'll get to that season.
Mike's losing his gourd over here because we're talking about other seasons right now. Just be aware. Yeah.
That's because, like, I think, and, you know, maybe we can talk about it a little bit more later, but, like, Day of the Dumpster is not the greatest pilot ever.
Yeah.
It's not the, story-wise, no, but for what it had to do, I will argue that it hit it out of the ballpark.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, again, like, you go back to the Super Sentai and, like, literally, like, the first episode, it's a two-parter. You don't really see much of anything because they have 16 seasons to go back on. It's like, oh, we know the formula. We didn't know what the formula was here, so they literally had to introduce, you know, here's what a Morpher is. Here's Zordon. Here's Alpha 5. Here's Rita Repulsa and all the bad guys. And also, here's a Megazord. Like, they had to introduce all the stuff that was very common in Japan in 30 minutes. And I feel like they could have done so much worse of a job than they did with Day of the Dumpster.
So this should have been a two-parter then.
Oh, for sure.
Maybe, yeah.
In any other season, this would have been a two-parter. Then there's the earthquake.
Yeah.
And I noticed there was a great moment that there's a little thing. Both Jason and Alpha refer to it as the big one. This is the big one. And I'm like, Is there something we're not being told?
Is the San Andreas Fault finally like splitting? Like,
I'm just like, what is the big one? And then
they're in California. That happens all the time.
Right, but they fire. But both of them using the same term is kind of weird.
Fair.
And then everyone else scatters to get out of the building, and the five teens freeze in place. And that's how they get chosen, by freezing in an emergency. Those are your Power Rangers. And now,
I would say it was more coincidental that, like, I think them freezing in place was coincidental, whereas, like, one could argue that they were chosen because clearly Alpha was spying on the teenagers of Angel Grove. Don't think too hard about that one.
Bit weird.
But, yeah.
And then we get to Sasha's line.
What line?
Five.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it was like right before that when Zordon says, give me, you know, overbearing and overly emotional. And Alpha goes, no, not teenagers. And I'm just like, I don't think that's how it was in the Russian dub. But I have to ask this. Why would you want five overbearing and overly emotional people to fight against a war against, you know, this evil entity? Like, that just makes no sense.
Also, none of them are overbearing and none of them are over emotional.
Exactly.
It's almost like Alpha went, yeah, nah, not this time, boss. I'm just going to get the ones I think are good.
You know what? I accept that headcanon wholeheartedly, but like Alpha decided that, you know what, Zordon, this time you're wrong.
If you went over a bearing and over emotional teenage, you'd get Bulk and Skull.
So accurate.
I mean, Bulk, Skull, and three of their friends.
There you go. Oh, God.
And like, oh. Just. And when you're selecting people who are going to save the world, right? The first two things you have in your brain are overbearing and over emotional.
But then don't they later refer to them as like teenagers with attitude?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I could see the latter more.
Well, and that's the reason for the whole tagline.
Not really.
You know, the tagline is teenagers with attitude.
But they're the not. Yeah, so I guess I'm wondering, like, they didn't even have that much attitude half the time, except when it comes to Bulk and Skull.
I mean, how do they have attitudes when they're trying to, like, save every, like, living organism on the Earth by, like, doing a fundraiser, like, every other week? Like,
yeah, save the whales, save the trees, save the marsupials, I don't know.
Save the statue.
There you go.
Statue.
Clean up the park. Oh God. It's just.
I mean, keep in mind, at the end of the day, they created the ultimate club that they are exclusive to, the Give Rita a Headache Club.
Right? But, like, the funny thing is I feel like they should have just sent a group of overly bearing and over emotional teenagers to the moon, and we could have solved this problem in two episodes. Especially with all of Rita's head issues.
Mm. I wonder what type of medicine she takes for all those headaches.
Clearly, it's not very effective. But it's interesting, though, that, like, Rita finds... since we're on the topic of Rita, she kind of seems to, like... Do they specifically mention how she knows? Or does she just happen to find the same energy signature that Zordon and Alpha's clubhouse like energizes or something?
I don't think they've ever talked about that.
She has a giant telescope that she like peeks into.
Oh.
I guess she magics it, I guess. I don't know.
We're talking about seeing the command center, right?
Yes, but also, like, Rita knowing who the Rangers are and everything. And
right. I'm guessing that... One second. Hold on.
Back.
I mean, you're talking about how she detects who the Rangers are, right? But they're quite blatantly seen walking out of the command center.
True.
Because they're attacked by parties right outside the command center.
And then I guess she just like keeps tracking them back to their homes and their school.
The bigger question, right, is if Rita hadn't sent the parties, would there be Power Rangers?
Ooh.
Because they would never have morphed.
Yeah, because like that fight that they went through, like him and Billy were just tossed aside really quickly. Trini kind of held her own a little bit. Zach and Jason definitely held their own as long as they could. But yeah.
Jason was the last that gets tossed, yeah.
Yeah, he was the last one to get tossed. But if they
hadn't fought the parties, they never would have morphed.
Yeah, because that was like the defining moment of fight or flight.
Answering the call.
Yeah.
I feel like they would have had to morph eventually anyway, because like, what were they going to do? Just like keep the power coins or like give them back the next day?
It's like it's the episode one destroyer droid theory, which I'll have to explain another time because if I start that, Mike will get mad. But like you can track things back to a certain point, and it's the attack of the parties. The more interesting thing is the nebulous existence of the command center and not, because like Rita obviously knows where it is. Divatox's forces follow the Power Rangers teleporting back to it at some point. Makes me wonder why no one else ever did that. But then when Kim's flying over the mountains in Foul Play in the Air, there's no sign of the command center. It's just not there. And you're like...
So maybe they're... I mean, knowing Alpha and Zordon, there has to be some kind of cloaking or shielding of some kind that, like, maybe... So, actually, no, this brings up a good theory. Rita spent 10,000 years in a dumpster. Meanwhile, Zordon and Alpha have been there the entire time, and they've been cloaked. Rita's technology or magic maybe isn't as advanced as it could be in order to detect it. Then Divatox, by the time that she shows up, is of a different generation, quote-unquote.
But Rita does know where the command center is.
But she didn't... Rita's sending the parties.
Yeah, and not only that, but as we also see later on with Green with Evil, she literally sends Tommy into the command center. Yeah.
So maybe there's some kind of there's something that prevents her specifically.
Well, we could throw it in the perspective of the same way as like the 2017 movie.
The what?
That thing. Because if think about this analogy. You know, like the way Brian was going on about how it was dusty and stuff like that in 2017 Command Center compared to this one where you literally, where it's clean, you can have it where you have, you know for a fact that both Rita and Zordon were on Earth. Mm. They were fighting on Earth. So that's why Rita's going to know where Zordon is because of that fact. She knows that the power coins are going to be there because of that fact. Kind of the same deal, because Zordon makes it known when he meets the Rangers for the first time and he educates them about them. You know, he tells them that this has been a battle that we did like 10,000 years ago. So the two of them kind of already know that they're going to be there in a way.
Yeah.
So, and that's kind of the same analogy with 2017. They know they're there because they fought each other there.
The what?
Kind of the same deal here. They fought each other here. And they know that each other's here.
It's just an autonomous response at this point.
Yeah.
Okay. I can buy that.
So I guess that brings us to the Rangers getting their powers, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is a monumental moment, should we say.
Yeah.
I don't know how to... As we learn later, there were Ranger teams in the past, right?
Yes.
And it's quite interesting that... It's just like, here's some powers. Have fun. And Mike asked a question in his segment where he asked, how did Jason know about the power sword?
Because Zordon doesn't say it.
But I think certain knowledge is imparted upon someone who gets the powers.
Yes.
Like, how do any of them know how to pilot Zords?
Yep.
Like, how do any of them know how to activate... How do any of them actually know how to morph? Because unlike in future seasons where they're told how to morph, or what the morphing sequence is,
the power coins told them to do this.
And I mean, like the one thing is that, and like I made this mistake the first time I wrote notes for this. I said, like, how did they know to call on the Zords? Well, like on this watch through again, it's like, oh, that's right, because Zordon told them about the Zords. You know, But like,
well, he said they would pilot Zords, but if you've never heard the term, like, what is a Zord? That could be literally anything. It could be a giant, it could be a tiny dinosaur that just walks around and cracks. I don't know. Like,
bearing in mind that in the 90s, there was a range of toys called Zoids, which were tiny little dinosaur creatures. So, like, I'm going to pilot a toy around?
Oh, man, I remember those.
Sorry, wrong country.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was, I always thought it was interesting, though, because he never, they never implied, oh, well, the Megazord has a sword.
But that's what I'm saying, is I think there's a certain level of knowledge that is imparted upon being given the powers.
I feel like it's almost like that scene in The Matrix where it's like, I know Kung Fu, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, it's downloaded Show into me. Their
God, I love that scene.
It becomes instinct anyway. It's just all instinct and like, at least the dinosaurs.
For all you know, there's a big label on the dashboard that says "When in danger, call for power sword."
This is true. We never. One of the things that like I really want to see like once is actually the cockpit from the other view, because we always see the Rangers inside the cockpit of the various Zords, but we never see it from their perspective. Like, what are they looking at? Well,
we do actually. We do kind of, and that's the thing where this is actually a continuity fail straight from the Sentai that we deal with all season long, and that is when they form up the Megazord and it actually goes into battle mode, into the final battle mode. Thank you, Brian. As he shows it on Zoom where we can see it and no one else can.
Yeah.
What am I looking at?
That's what they're seeing.
But
I got this.
Actually see it, like in. Okay, now hold on. Things are coming back to me now.
But let me finish this point.
Yes.
When you see them from the view of looking into the cockpit, right? It goes Trini in the back left, with Billy in front of her. Jason's in the center, with Zach to his right and Kim behind Zach. When they do the thing where they show it looking out of the cockpit, out towards the enemies, Billy is in the back on the right-hand side of the what is now the left-hand side of the screen, or right-hand side of the screen, with Kim in front of him, and Trini is next to Jason with Zach and behind her. They completely flipped everything around.
I never realized that.
Okay, yeah. So I take it back, because as soon as I take back half my point, because I realized that, like, once when Brian showed the photo, that, like, there is a moment where, like, the Zord is rising, and you do actually see everything kind of
go from their perspective.
From their perspective. But that's not exactly what I had in mind when I said my initial point. But that's okay.
You wanted to see what the cockpit was like, which, honestly, same. Like,
or there's, like, they could have, like, heads-up displays in their helmets.
Yeah.
Because we see that in future Ranger teams.
A little bit, yeah.
I think they reused the cockpit from Jetman, by the way. They kind of gave it a new paint job, and that's what you see now. But
they had to do like the 1.5 stuff, they did, yeah.
Yeah.
So then, I guess we can... Should we talk about the rules of being a Ranger, or are we not there yet?
We can talk about the rules.
The rules are never use your powers for personal gain. Never.
Except for when they show up on TV.
That wasn't personal gain. You could argue that's not personal gain. That's PR. I don't know.
What's the P in PR mean?
Public relations.
Hey, who knows? Maybe Zordon approved it.
Yeah. On the other hand, like, it's
paid
a way
time
to,
off.
Like, you could argue it's a way to reassure the public that, like, all right.
He's just jazzing, you know.
Rule number two, never escalate a battle unless you have to by read at.
They do escalate it once, I believe.
Or just end it quick.
Right? And then the third one, which is the most obvious one, don't tell anybody you're a Power Ranger.
Secret identities have to be a thing in American television, I guess, for superheroes.
They don't have to be.
But they're not always.
Yeah.
in Power, even in Power Rangers, like Lightspeed Rescue didn't have
they're,
it.
They're open in Lightspeed Rescue.
Yeah,
I think also in SPD.
Yes, SPD, yeah. Beast. No, nope. They have secret identities in Beast Morphers. I take it back.
Some of them have secret identities in Beast Morphers.
Well, yeah. So it goes back and forth a little bit. But I don't know. Like,
that's one of the reasons that Lightspeed's one of my favorite seasons is because they're open about who they are. They're a government-funded thing, and they openly help the public. I love it. Also, Carter Grayson's a badass. Now, let's get on to... We knew this was coming, right? Ranger assignments.
Ranger assignments, all right.
And what does... Different seasons have different ranger colors, obviously, right? So... The question is, what do various Ranger seasons colors mean to you and to this season specifically, right? Like, because we'll have a discussion in the finale. Spoiler alert, we've already recorded it. About ranking the Rangers, right? Mm-hmm. But that's not necessarily talking about which colors mean what and that kind of thing. So we've got six colors, let's be fair. Only five are assigned right here, but we know the sixth is there. He's always looming. Oh Lord, is he ever looming? So let's talk about the actual, right, because there are a few things that seem to be running themes. Like red is always the heart of the, like he's the
leader.
Not necessarily the leader, because
most of the
sometimes
time,
like, white's the leader, sometimes
pink.
98% of the time,
red is the leader, right?
Yeah.
But he also, red also seems to, I often like to call them the muscle of the team. Mm-hmm. Red is often the muscle of the team. Jason, Rocky, TJ, they all fill that role, right? Andros is the most experienced ranger in space. Carter's definitely the muscle of Lightspeed Rescue.
He's a firefighter.
Like, Cole is clearly the muscle of Wild Force, that kind of thing. He's a muscle. What do the other colors mean to you guys? Like,
Well, when you look at the Blue Ranger, I think they've always made the Blue Ranger like the smartest ranger.
Not always.
Well, I mean, look at Billy.
For Mighty Morphing and for Mighty Morphing, yeah.
Not for Zia.
Maybe for Turbo, because of Justin.
Justin, and you could also probably put it out there for I'm trying to think here. Lost Galaxy.
Yeah.
I'd say Kendrick was the brain there.
Fair.
Yeah. So it's like, it kind of depends on, it really depends on the season. Definitely for this season, or at least for the first three seasons, the Blue Ranger is like the brains of the team because he's able to do like the communicators, the rad bug, which we'll see later.
In this season, yeah. For sure, he's definitely the brains of the team.
And I might not even say like in Mighty Morphin, but certainly in Power Rangers and also in, you know, the Japanese version, Blue to me has always been second in command. You know what I mean? Like they're the one that takes over when like Red is incapacitated or like if, you know, something's going on, it's like Blue's the one that steps up and needs to, you know, gather everybody else.
See, but the thing is
yeah,
that
I feel that Zach in this.
Yeah.
In Mighty Morphin.
I agree with Ben on that one, because when you kind of look at Billy has always he's had his moments. Don't get me wrong. Billy has 100% had his moments where he has stepped up to really be that leader in a way. But I've always seen Zach be that really true second in command, and even sometimes Trini more than Billy. Yeah. Kind of take over the second in command.
Is much like Finster's always the one that comes up with the monsters, but Rita and Goldar take the credit. Billy's the one that comes up with the plans, but Zach and Jason are the ones that execute them.
Yeah.
Sure. He is the brains behind the operations. I would say that oftentimes, and going back, I'm racking my brain through the different Power Ranger seasons. And I think in a lot of ways, the Yellow Ranger ends up kind of being like a grounding character. Mm-hmm. In this is if you look at Trini, if you look at, what was her name in Lost Galaxy? If you look at Time Force, they're kind of the ones that keep everybody grounded. They're the ones that sometimes get them to look at things from a different perspective. That's kind of how I see it. I definitely agree with Mike and Ben about the blue versus black ranger dynamics. And the pink ranger, I feel is kind of the heart in a lot of ways, with exceptions. But in this season, I don't know if I would classify Kimberly that way. She's just she's the girliest girl of the season.
She's what I wrote up as the face.
Yeah.
It's a common term in it's used a lot in RPGs and things. The face is the one that does all of the charisma based stuff. Kimberly strikes me as the face of the group. The Yellow Ranger for me often is a cipher, and that's not a bad thing. She's whatever the writers need them to be, or he is whatever the writers need them to be at the time. Fair. It's not always that way, but a lot of the time it is.
I can see that.
And that's not a bad thing, right? Yeah. If it's supported by other good character moments. Take the Yellow Ninja Storm Ranger, Dustin. He's got a really strong character built around the fact that he's also a bit of a cipher. You know what I mean? And that's cool. I like that. Whereas with Trini, she's just kind of a cipher. And that's fine. Blue, brains. And for me, black is about reliability. The Black Ranger is about reliability in this season.
Mm-hmm.
Zach's always there. He's always ready to go to bat. He's always ready to help the others. He's always ready to... You know what I mean?
He's always got your back.
Yeah. And he's often the first one to show up when others are isolated, that kind of thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll agree with that.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
And then we get Green with Envy.
And then we get Mike. I mean, Tommy Oliver.
We'll get there when we get there.
Yeah.
Yep.
But the Green Ranger is very interesting. If we just talk about what green means, right? It just, at least in power, this season of Power Rangers, it represents something unnatural.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in future seasons, the Green Ranger is almost my favorite quite regularly. Adam in Turbo, what's his face in SPD?
Bridge.
Bridge. I love Bridge.
Bridge is the best.
Bridge is the best. Anyway, but in Mighty Morphin, Green is just this nebulous outsider sort of character. I wish they'd done a bit more with the fact that Green was a mix of yellow and blue.
Maybe not look at the Green Ranger as a color ranger, but also, you know, more in the sense of a Sixth Ranger, because that's also kind of the way the Quantum Ranger is in Time Force.
where he's kind of like yeah. how he's kind of like the outsider in a way. You can also say the same thing for the one from Lightspeed Rescue, whatever, because that was an American
Ranger.
Yeah, because that was one of the few American made Rangers, and you know he was also kind of an outsider as well. Yeah. So yeah. when you kind of look at it from like a six Ranger,
but then again, you say that, but they wouldn't have been if it hadn't worked for Tommy.
Yeah. So I mean. But, I mean, in a way, you kind of, but still kind of look at it, maybe not from a color perspective, but as a Six Ranger perspective.
Fair.
Because yeah. green actually comes in and replaces black quite often in the yeah. main five.
Yeah.
So.
I think the most primary team, I think on both sides is Power Rangers and Super Sentai. It is red, yellow, blue, green, and yellow. I think black is not nearly as common as green for like a fifth ranger. So, but also keep in mind too that Tommy, he feels like an outsider and it feels a little weird, but that's also because that was the very first like permanent sixth ranger.
Yeah.
So.
And that's what I'm saying is he sort of established the trope.
Yeah. And Brian, you would actually probably know this, but going into, because you're more aware of the Sentai. With the Sentai, was Jew Ranger the first one to actually have a Six Ranger? Or were there Six Rangers before that?
So I think for Mask Man, there was X1 Mask. I could be completely wrong on that. I think I got the season wrong. But that was the first time that there was like the idea of a Six Ranger, but he was never a permanent addition to the team. But it wasn't until... Zero Ranger that like you did have in fact a Six Ranger that became a permanent part of the team until they were no longer a permanent part of the team because of, you know, obvious
being
reasons.
Dead.
Yeah. On account of death. but yeah, that was the first
not
time
being alive anymore.
Indeed. Back to you, Ben.
Back to the studio.
I didn't know this became a news show now.
We're going to throw it over to Sasha with the sports.
In hockey news. No, just kidding. besides, come on, guys. In this game, I'm clearly the weather girl. Ted, you want to be the weather girl?
Brian's our weather girl. Brian's the pretty one here.
Oh, damn.
Don't you go putting that evil on me, Ben.
How's that evil on me? I'm complimenting you, dude.
Thank you.
So what I was actually going to say that related to Power Rangers was that the fact that, and this is something Brian brought up earlier about like the way that the episode was executed, and that like as a kid, we have to remember that as we do this show, we are adults. This needs to be emphasized. We are adults of varying ages watching Power Rangers. And some of us of varying ages. But, you know, so the perspective that we watched some of these episodes as a kid versus when we watched them as an adult are very, very different. Like, I remember watching the first episode and just being glued to my seat, like, oh my God, I can't wait to see what happens next.
Yeah.
And as an adult now, having watched every single season that exists, going back is, it's like, you know, when you go, like, when you move somewhere and then, like, 30 years later, you go back to that place and you realize it's not exactly how you remember it? Like,
oh, man.
This is the effect that I have. It looks like this is the effect that Ben has.
Oh, man.
It's quite funny because I didn't really, and we'll go into this later on in the episodes, but I didn't really watch Power Rangers growing up. My journey with Power Rangers started about a year ago.
Yeah,
And I've watched all of this stuff pretty much for the, and that I caught an episode here or there, obviously, because every kid did, right? But I've watched a lot of this stuff for the first time in the last 12 months.
Wow,
it wasn't a big part of that was like spawned off of our car ride home from Wilkes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we were covering Wilkes Comic Con for the 321 TV Twitch channel. We were live streaming there. And on the way back, we just started to getting talking. And I started asking Mike Power Rangers questions. I just sat there. It was really quiet for me. I was like, hey, Mike, you're a Power Rangers fan. And he was like, let's reenact it. Hey, Mike, you're a Power Rangers fan.
Well, yeah, I just spent $100 on some old school toys. Of course I am.
I've got a question.
Okay.
Remember how when Zordon made the White Ranger?
Yeah.
How long did that take him?
About a season and a half.
No, but like in universe, how long did it take him? From like the moment they got Tommy to like the moment he showed up as the White Ranger.
You mean as in like when Tommy came in as the Green Ranger initially?
No. From like when they picked him up from practicing at the lakeside.
Oh.
It's like a couple of days, right? A
couple days, yeah.
Right. So you're telling me that Zordon can mass produce Rangers?
Yeah, in a way, kind of.
So why the next time that Rita looked through the scope, did she not go, let's get the Power Rangers? Oh my God, why are there 27 of them?
There's not that many colors.
Oh, that's a dino charge.
Okay, valid. Back then,
and that's kind of where everything started.
And it became this 2-hour conversation.
It was all the way home. It was a 6-hour conversation.
Yeah, we're talking about there were breaks. There were definitely breaks. But like you were talking about the comics because you wanted to know about the Lord Draken storyline.
Yeah, and you know, I started asking about like different seasons of Power Rangers, and Mike was like, I don't know the answer to all your questions, dude. And I'm like, well, I guess then I'm just going to have to watch all of Power Rangers.
Well, it's not just that I don't have the answers to all your questions. It's that I also just don't remember everything because there is just so
that
much.
That is not having the answer to hand,
yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
Got to dispel a myth right here. Not having an answer is not bad.
Yeah.
Not having the answer and not being willing to admit that you don't have the answer is bad.
Yeah. But yeah, I just couldn't. I mean, like, let's look at it. We're almost at 1,000 episodes of Power Rangers.
Oh my God.
Like, legitimately. Like,
yep.
The number one thing that people are always going to remember is like, I'm always going to remember stuff about season one and the first half of season two, essentially up to the Zed Waves episode. And maybe after the power transfer and stuff like that. But, like, there are other seasons that I have watched where I remember those slightly better than I remember others. And that's just because there is so much to take in. And obviously the favorites that we've always, like, really gravitated to are the ones that we'll remember more than the others. So.
Yeah. I think my problem is that, like, I stopped vlogging during Turbo, and I was going into high school right around 2000-2001, which was when like Lightspeed Rescue was coming out, and like I remember like, you know, being a gamer and like having Nintendo Power and seeing ads for like Power Ranger games coming out and going like, oh, they're doing that now. But never, like, it's gonna be a journey for me to like get into later seasons and like watch like you know, Wild Force. I never watched Wild Force. I never watched, you know, RPM. I never, you know, I haven't seen any of those seasons for various reasons. So, but I also remember Mighty Morphin vividly because I was literally had my eyes glued to the TV that entire time. So it's.
I mean, Mighty Morphin's where a lot of people's Power Rangers stops, right? Like,
yeah.
You mentioned Turbo or Zeo or Lightspeed Rescue, and they're like, that's the show with the dinosaurs, right?
So for me, it was interesting because when I moved to America, it was like, I think it was Wild Force that had been airing. This was right around the time where Disney had bought the rights to Power Rangers. And so they were like running them on JetX. mm-hmm. pretty much nonstop. So that's really how I watched a lot of the seasons in various different, I don't remember the exact orders. I remember watching, you know, Time Force, Lightspeed Rescue, In Space, and Wild Force. And that was kind of like the Power Rangers. And then I'd watched everything up through, I think I stopped at like Overdrive. Cause I was like, I have a life. I'm in high school. I don't need Power Rangers. So then like I was late to the game on actually in Overdrive. That's when I dropped it. And then I came back for what's it called? Jungle Fury and an RPM and then Neo Saban. But you know, everybody has their own Power Rangers journey. And what I love about Power Rangers is that you can start it anywhere. You can start it with Wild Force. You can start it with Jungle Fury. You can start it at any point, and then go back through the entire 27 years of history. And that's kind of fun. It's like watch. It's like Doctor Who. You can start. Everybody has their doctor, but we have our Power Rangers seasons. Like our like
you're
gonna
get
season.
Me started if we talk about Doctor Who.
We're not. We're just talking about like there's a gateway doctor, there's a gateway season.
Yeah.
Does that mean that like when it comes to Power Rangers, my Power Rangers is the equivalent of William Hartnell?
Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
But actually but the piggyback off of that one point though, it's like you mentioned Wild Force. And, you know, given how they have the 10th anniversary episode in that season where you see all the past Red Rangers minus Forever Rocky Red. With Forever Red, that right there.
How about that motorcycle?
Yeah. That right there actually opens the door for people to actually go, hey, there's all these past Rangers, and it makes people want to go back and watch.
Wild Force still has the best Ranger crossover to this day. Reinforcements from the future, man.
Oh, yep. Love it.
Yep.
So yeah, Power Rangers is a journey.
It's a big one.
I write Power Rangers, my journey, every 2 weeks. On the-
yep. Yep. Which you have your next one coming out on a Monday.
Yep.
But so with Day of the Dumpster, it is the beginning of this massive, long journey for Voices from the Grid. Mm-hmm. This episode clocked in at 20 minutes and 45 seconds, and per the IMDb, got a 7.5 out of 10.
Ow. As I say at the end of every episode that we're going to record, when you give me these IMDb ratings, who's reviewing these?
Nerds that watched the episode when they were like 5 and 8 and then like decided to review it 20 years later when IMDb became a thing.
Either that or it's like the old school like TV guide reviews from like that time, you know?
There's no way, man.
Well, no, because I have seen like hyperlinks to like old shows and like, hey, they've got an article up from like 1991. I'm like, how? Okay.
Yeah, I mean it's very viable that it could be like the old like TV guide reviews or just scores in general, because like I have a couple of the old TV guys that have like the Power Rangers on it and the Turtles on it and stuff like that. And
that
like,
doesn't they, happen until In Space, mate.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm talking about like the first Turtles movie.
I know.
But if you go through it, they actually have all the TV, all the shows and stuff actually have like little reviews, like scores and stuff. And that's what it could be in IMDb. I never really went into research that side.
I can promise you it's not.
Yeah.
I remember they used to do that for Nitro and Raw's War back in the day, but that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, pre-review live content.
Yeah. No, like the next day, I think.
But yeah, so. Just no one in their right mind could look at this and go, that's a 7.8 out of 10.
Yeah.
That's like a 6.2.
And most of that is what it earns for being such a start of a monumental franchise.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's not good TV. That's not fair to say. It could be considered good TV. It's just not. 7.8 out of 10 TV.
So, with that,
were you gonna give us a color?
Oh yeah,
we haven't got to the.
Oh yeah,
the,
we haven't gotten the colors.
Assign the colors yet, mate.
So how's this? How about you assign the colors, and when you assign the color, we could have.
No, let's just assign the colors, and then we'll do the outro.
Okay.
I'm in control of the color thing here. You had your chance, and you were like, nah, I'm far too stressed at work. Someone else
did. I was literally being pulled in 20 different places. No, at the
I understand
time
that. But you can't give up control and then come back and try and take it.
That's right. Be frustrated.
I'm not being frustrated. I'm saying go on. Take it. Go.
So I have been given the power by the others to assign this season's colors.
We're gonna regret
this. I don't like that evil laugh right there.
We're gonna regret this.
Now, I have been informed reliably by a certain member of the cast that they really don't want to be the Pink Ranger. As Sasha crushes her arms.
And she starts, like, the pouty face a little bit.
Oh.
However.
No!
I was never going to make you the Pink Ranger anyway.
I relief. Okay, continue.
So, after thinking long and hard about this, I think I'm going to stick to my original sort of assignments. Admittedly, there's not five of us, there's only four, and which means two colors are getting left out if we use green. Are we using green?
No, I always thought we were just going to use the original five.
Okay.
Yeah.
In that case, Mike, I'm making you the Blue Ranger.
Okay.
As the brains behind this operation, you are the Blue Ranger. Okay?
I'm down with that.
Brian?
Mm-hmm.
I'm making you the Yellow Ranger.
Awesome.
You will fill any role you need to. And on top of that, you're kind of our multicultural expert as well, because you know the Sentai. And that is a role that Trini filled quite well in the show. Sasha. I'm making you the Red Ranger.
Ooh.
Wow.
Why?
Because you're our muscle.
Yep. As the tiniest and shortest person of this gang, I am the muscle for.
Hey, they don't make diamonds the size of boulders. And as for me, I am going to be this season's Pink Ranger. Because I can talk, and that's about all I've got. Which kind of sums Kim up, really. Just saying. There we go. That's our... I was going to say that Sasha could be the Green Ranger because she can kick all of her butts. But, yeah, Red will do.
I'll take it.
The Red Ranger could do that, too.
Yes, true.
So with that, Miss Red Ranger, where can the people find you on the social medias?
Well, you can find me ranting about random stuff on geekgirl101.tumblr.com, Instagram.
Legitimately thought you said renting.
Ranting, not renting. Geekgirl101.tumblr.com. Instagram is geekycaptain.
That's so funny.
Because you're five. And finally, you can find me writing comic book reviews on my brand new WordPress, which is geekycaptainwrites.wordpress.com.
Awesome.
And Nerdy Notions.
And of course, that X75Productions/Nerdy Notions.
Yeah. Nerdy Notions thing isn't the social medias.
Brian, Mr. Yes. Yellow Ranger.
Which
is actually kind of accurate for the Sentai. Where can the people find you on this social medias?
You can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/wonderinggeek. You can also find me at Castwave Studios, where we're working on Boldly Going Nowhere every week. You can also find me on Instagram at Draken22. And yeah, I'm kind of everywhere. So,
Mr. Pink Ranger, Mr. Pink, where can the people find you on social media?
Now you see where I was going. Let's be honest, I'll do this if they don't want to. But if they do, they can find me on the Twitters at Bob T. Goldfish. They can find me once every 2 weeks over on
TXHTHockey.com/AwesomeMania.
Doing the Wrestling Sister podcast to this. They can also find my columns about Power Rangers every 2 weeks over at
TXHTHockey.com/VFTG.
Yep. And you can find me doing various video game things over at twitch.tv/321_TV. Yeah, that's about it for me, really.
Yeah. And then, of course, you can find me on the Twitters at thelindenbaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75production, and, of course, everything on the website of txhthockey.com, and then for the show specifically, /VFTG, Voices from the Grid, obviously. Those are our initials for the show. So with that, Brian is now in a Yellow Ranger shirt.
I think it should be noted that first he was wearing a Green Ranger, White Ranger shirt, and now he's wearing like a traditional Yellow Ranger costume shirt, t-shirt. So nicely done. Nicely done.
So with that, Ben.
I had to morph.
Ben, with that, take us away.
With that, I think I can speak for my fellow hosts when I say, guys, gals, and online pals, in the words of the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, be excellent to each other. And party on, non-gender-specific honorifics.
And until our next awesome episode, grab your morphers.
And may the power protect you.
Ay, 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 ay.